Yes, indeed, friends. Welcome back. It's so good to be with you on the Buffer Podcast. And the first thing I want to say is thank you for listening and subscribing and downloading and liking. And the biggest thing you can do for us is to rate and review the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. That's the right thing to do. And it would help us a lot so that more people can start to discover the Buffer. So welcome to the show. My name is Tony Tone.
And I'm Joel Krausar. We've got and don't forget to follow us on Twitter too. We have our Twitter feed up and rolling. I rebranded that thing today. I don't know if you saw that, Tony, but we're full in guerrilla marketing mode for the Buffer Podcast. There can be only one.
Yes, I'm so excited that we have more opportunities to reach people, whether it's Twitter, Facebook. I don't think we're quite at the TikTok level yet.
I would have to download the app first before I think we could be on TikTok. I'm not a TikToker.
Right. Well, I feel like my experience with TikTok was when it came out, I didn't understand it. I had it on my phone, and then I literally got rid of TikTok for almost, I would say, 6 to 10 months. And then I came back to it. And I started an account for my job, and I don't still know what to do with it because I feel like an old man. And you know, it's one of those things. Now it just makes me laugh. And what I'll do is I'll message Joel things that I think are funny, and then you're able to see them without downloading the app, which is genius, right?
It's like, really brought awesome. A rebirth to Casey and JoJo and the song All My Life, which I know you, as a former wedding DJ, have had to play that song probably far too often in your life.
Yeah, but I also feel like I have a really strong affinity for Casey and JoJo and All My Life, because when I started going to school dances in like 96, 97, 98, that was one of the jams. And yeah. you know how it was at
that and Too Close by Next.
I just remember, like, every movie that's ever stereotyped a school dance where boys are on one side, girls are on the other. That was literally my experience at the Catholic school dances that I went to from 6th to 8th grade. And then you'd get brave enough to like have that awkward slow dance. And again, it's just like they portray it in the movies and TV. Hands on the hips, no eye contact, so awkward.
Is there anything worse what to do than being 13 years old in a middle school gym or a Y gym, and you're like, and it's kind of like it's almost like picking partners in PE class, where it's like there's always one or two people who gravitate, and then it's like, oh, then it's the group of friends who are just like, well, there's no one else, so you and I are partnered up this go round.
That's right.
So it's like it's usually one or two actually have some sort of romantic feelings, and then the rest of the friends are just kind of paired up because they're in the group.
I'll never forget, like, I graduated. So I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, Elmwood Park and then Oak Park, Illinois. 8th grade graduating class, Ascension Catholic School, 48 kids. Then I went to a giant public high school. Shout out to Oak Park River Forest. So I went from like these really small, I mean, I literally like brought my CDs to the school dances because
what was your go-to jam for getting people moving on the dance floor when you're in middle school?
Well, I didn't even really DJ. Our history teacher, shout out to Ken Sangstock, he would end up DJing, but I had a pretty good CD collection. So I would like bring him CDs, and I was like, okay, here's the Sugar Ray CD and here's the track number that you need to play.
I just want to fly.
Exactly. And it was fun. But then I remember,
did you have the Cardigans, Little Low Fool going?
I think I did have that. There were so many good one hit wonders.
I'm just thinking, because you're 3 or 4 years younger than me. So I'm like trying to put my mind in what was like sophomore year homecoming. Like I'm trying to think what the soundtrack was of my early high school days. I think that's what we're lining up here.
My freshman year in high school, we had this dance in the fall that was called MORP, which, get this, is prom spelled backwards.
Whoa.
Mind and it was a very blown, like, informal dance, but it was a shock to my system because there were like If I had to guess, I would say conservatively, there were probably 500 kids at the dance, and there was no separation between folks on the dance floor. So I just remember being like 6'2", 185 pounds, and just being like, I don't know what's going on. The music was loud and it was hot. And that's why I have such an affinity for any time a movie can portray, because I did have a lot of those experiences that you see, even if they're just blown out of proportion in like American Pie or Can't Hardly Wait or 10 Things I Hate About You.
Really should, we should do like prom movies here because it is prom season. We should maybe, that could be an episode of The Buffer.
I feel like you could do that even just that high school with graduation, like that ultimate high school movie.
Well, 10 because Things again, I a Hate lot, About You. I mean, that'd be in that category.
And that's what's tough for me. Like if I had to pick between 10 Things I Hate About You, Can't Hardly Wait, American Pie, I feel like there's bits and pieces from all of those movies that are ridiculous. But then you're like, yep, I was at a house party and this happened. And wow. Like, so that's a kudos. And it's crazy when you find out, because I saw American Pie at a very young age. I think my mom actually bought our tickets to see it. So she didn't know what it was.
Like an eighth grader or freshman in high school, because they are the same age as me. So like those movies came out. So the summer of my junior year of high school going into senior year, that's when American Pie came out. So like every sequel too, I was at the exact same stage of life as they were. So it was, that's how I can remember it. Cause whatever academic year they were in, that was my class. So that's how I was able to kind of track.
And I know that you also have, you know, you also have a place in your heart for those movies. So we could, I mean, even just 10 Things I Hate About You.
That's my wife's favorite movie of all time. That's my wife's favorite movie of all time is 10 Things I Hate About You. I'll watch it anytime too. I love it.
It's really good. And I'm here to say, like, I'm not ashamed to tell you all listening to The Buffer that I just this week was listening to the Can't Hardly Wait soundtrack via Apple Music on my phone. Because it's just got, as the kids say, it's got some bangers on it, everybody. I don't know what that means, but I think it means good music. I'm not sure. But I'm here. I'm also something the kids are saying, apparently, I'm here for it. So, yeah, I don't know if
I mean, when you're 17, 18 years old, I mean, there was no bigger star than Jennifer Love Hewitt at that time. You know, you had... I Know What You Did Last Summer, Party of Five, and then Can't Hardly Wait. Like, that was it. I mean, she was a big, big deal then. And I think an underrated part of that part of history in Hollywood.
Yeah, she had a good run. I mean, a lot of people, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar had a good run and still has maintained relevancy, Nev Campbell. But yeah, Jennifer Love Hewitt definitely was at that other level.
There's definitely an episode that we should do over those late 90s movies. We should save some of our content for that, because I think that's something we need to revisit, the Cruel Intentions, that era of movie.
Well, I agree. And I think the one thing I just want to mention before we get into the battle this week is something that I believe you got caught up on and that I've spoken about a little bit on the show. And this doesn't really fit into a category that'll come up later, like the Confessions or the Guilty Pleasure, because it's so good. It's Mayor of Easttown on HBO Max. You're caught up.
Kind of.
Was I right?
I've got the first two episodes done.
Well, I feel okay. So the third episode is good. The second episode, though, tell me what you're feeling at the end. And by the way, if you haven't seen it, it's Kate Winslet. It's amazing. Evan Peters. It's on HBO Max. They're releasing it every Sunday, which is nice. So you don't kind of just have that massive dump all at once where you could binge it, which would also be nice. But what are your reactions to Mayor of Easttown?
Holy bleep are my reactions to Mayor of Easttown. Are you talking about the reveal about the secret that her friend implies?
It's an unbelievable ending.
Are we spoiling it? Are we going to talk spoilers?
I think we should. Yeah, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. If you haven't caught up, turn this off now and then, you know, rejoin us after you've finished watching it. So I love David Denman. Like, he's one of my favorite actors. I loved him before he was Roy in The Office. And that reveal of her friend saying, I think he might be the father of this, you know, this child, is just crazy. Mortifying. And it totally turns the storyline on its head.
Yeah. Did you forget like that? That's Kate Winslet, because
she's good. She's so transformative in this role.
It's her. It, you know, it looks like her. It doesn't sound like her because of the Pennsylvania accent.
She just drinks root and rock and beach hoagies. I mean, that Pennsylvania accent is so good in this show. Like that whole southeastern PA dialect, which is so entertaining. Like it's so specific, and I think it's a dialect that we don't talk about enough in like the United States. And having sold and worked in that area in my life, they're so all spot on. And it's not just like her throwing 100 miles an hour. Every single person in this cast is locked into the dialect. They're locked into this, you know, blue collar town. They're locked into everything. So it's so good, and it's so well done. Guy Pearce showing up and, you know, just throwing smoke the entire time.
He's like great.
Red herrings left and right.
Yeah. You know, and I'm here to tell you, like I shared before, you know, if you haven't watched, I know this much is true with Mark Ruffalo. It's kind of in the same vein. These are heavy dramas. And I don't know if it's just because, well, I don't want to say that I'm not a heavy drama fan or that I've become more of a heavy drama fan since I've gotten older. I just think I appreciate when something is really good. And ultimately, it doesn't matter really what the genre is. It could be really good comedy. It could be really good sci-fi, action, suspense. But this is just like really, really good. Well, those two series.
Too, I mean, she's a cop. You know, Kate Winslet plays this cop, Mayor Sheehan. And her family life is messed up. You know, she's divorced. Her kids don't really like her. She's really not likable. Like she's pretty awful to be honest, but you know that she also has this moral compass, and you also can tell that at one point in her life she was super important, you know, the hometown hero, basketball star, and now she's stayed home and she's this cop. And her mom, played by Jean Smart, is so good in this show. Like that the final scene where she's like yelling at the neighbors, like, what's going on? She's like, what are you yelling about? Oh, I'm sorry. Just come on in. Like, it's just this, it's so spot on. I mean, everything is very realistic. And it hits heavy. That's for certain. You know, kids are dying in this show. I mean, there's missing people. There's a lot. It's a big deal.
And it'll be interesting to see how it progresses. Again, there's three episodes out. There's seven total. I just hope it doesn't
punch us in the nuts like the end of what was the Undoing, where it was like great show, sucked ending, like horrible ending.
Yeah, I think I looked into it, and the mayor of Easttown, you know, they had some production interruption with COVID, and they kind of finished it in September of 2020. So I guess where I'm getting is like my wife is convinced that it's going to be a cliffhanger ending, and I don't think that's the case.
And if it is, it's fine. Ultimately, as long as there's season two, well, I don't care.
I know, but I just feel like how often are you going to get a Kate Winslet in this cast to be able to do another series like this? You know, when they say limited run series, to me, that means it's a complete it's a complete vessel, if you'll have it, or it's a complete story arc with a, you know, beginning, middle, and a definitive end. So we'll see what happens, but I want to get into the battle, because this is a very interesting streaming battle again on the buffer. So if you're just joining us, maybe it's the first time, again, thanks for listening to the show. We talk about movies, TV shows, reality shows, streaming content, things in the theater. And each week we're putting up two different pieces of content. It could be a movie versus a TV show. It really, you know, sometimes it matters, sometimes it doesn't. We'll tell you in a little bit what we're working on for the next couple of weeks. But for this week, this would be a movie versus, again, kind of a limited series. And I want you to start, Joel, because this is what you have is something that we've both seen. And I just don't know if we're going to agree overall, because I watched your choice and I fell asleep and then I finished it. And I won't say anymore.
Never a good start to an argument when you're...
No.
So my choice to take into the ring for this week is the Michael B. Jordan and Tom Clancy's Without Remorse on Amazon Prime, which is this bringing this character of John Kelly to life, which is a prominent kind of tactical character in the Tom Clancy book world and universe, which it's amazing how Tom Clancy's writings have really become IP and how they've grown with the Jack Ryan series on Prime and obviously the movies with Alec Baldwin and Harrison Ford and Ben Affleck. You know, it's been really interesting to see how these books have grown into this cinematic IP. Books I remember reading. My dad's a big Tom Clancy fan, and so we kind of the books were always in the house. And Cardinal of the Kremlin, I remember reading that in high school, and Hunt for Red October, obviously important. And this movie, so my hopes were high because of that, and also I'm such a big Michael B. Jordan fan. And he doesn't disappoint. I mean, Michael B. Jordan's really good in this movie, and there will be some spoilers here as we move forward. So if you haven't seen this, just a heads up. You know, it starts with them on a mission, you know, a covert operation in partnership with the CIA. Michael B. Jordan's character, John Kelly, is with, I believe, Navy SEAL. He's a Navy SEAL. And they're mm-hmm. working in conjunction with the CIA and CIA operatives. And what they think the mission is turns out to not be the case. And the SEAL team now is all of a sudden questioning maybe the motivation of this operation. And, you know, really in the first 7 minutes, two members of the Navy SEALs are assassinated on home soil. After then fast forward to, you know, 6 months after this operation, and two members of the SEAL team are killed. And then we get to Michael B. Jordan's family, who he's got a pregnant wife, and there's a home invasion by some clear tactical operators who he confronts. He succeeds in killing a couple of them. However, they don't succeed in killing him, but they do succeed in killing his pregnant wife and unborn child, which is a really heavy way to open up 20 minutes of a movie.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think they were going to go there. I really didn't.
Yeah.
First of all, there's a guy that gets hit by a van when he's taking his garbage out. That
was intense as hell. Like, I was
for a second, I was like, he's fine, right? Like, that's what I thought. I was like, he's probably okay. And then I thought, no, he's definitely dead.
Well, and then you hear his kids scream because they saw it happen. And then another guy is just in his car on the phone with his wife.
Mm.
And a van opens up and, you know, takes him out. And so now so it sets the tone that, okay, these people mean business. And long story short, they don't succeed in killing John Kelly. And that's not the person you want to leave alive because of his... to steal from the movie Taken, specific set of skills. He now in his mind is dead. It's almost a Punisher type vibe where it's like, you know, he's already dead in his own mind, so he'll do whatever it takes to avenge. Yeah. And his commanding officer with the Navy SEALs really helps him get some intel. The premise of this movie should have worked. It really should have, as far as being entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Michael B. Jordan, the acting is just flat out bad in this movie, in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. So I'm with you. I think there's some great sequences, like Joel was saying in the beginning, you know, when he's, you know, they break into his house and he's in the basement of his house, like jamming out to music and the power goes out. And then there's this awesome, and there's like these really good action sequences, but then like the rest of the movie is just, it's kind of like, it's so not good that I found myself waiting for the next action sequence. And there's this amazing like hotel rooftop shootout. And like, and then there's this other awesome sequence. And I think those performances are just, maybe that's kind of I think you hit the nail on the head. I think if those performances are more convincing, maybe you're interested in more of the story and not just the action.
Well, it's like, I think if you think to like movies like The Hunt for Red October, what's great about that movie is Alec Baldwin's character of Jack Ryan being able to be inside the mind of Captain Ramius and to know that he does these crazy Ivans to the left. You know, to do those things, the chess match is there, and that's what's compelling. It's not necessarily the defecting of the submarine. It's how these two people are so in tune with each other's practices. Not necessarily the Connery's character, but Alec Baldwin's character, that you trust that he's going to always make the right decision to preserve, you know, a nuclear war, to keep that from happening. With this, it was like, you don't, the only expertise that you see is that Michael B. Jordan's a badass and that he can kill anybody and that he's, you know, a scary dude with a tactical vest and, you know, resources. You don't necessarily know what that purpose is, other than he's a vengeance machine in the second half of this movie, even though they're being assigned these operations to try and, you know, protect it. I mean, you don't really buy into it because it's like, I don't really know what's at stake. They never really tell you what's at stake on a, you know, from the intelligence community. You just feel like it's a kind of just a big pawn game, but you don't know what board you're playing. So I guess that was my issue. Like the plot was so poorly written that it was, like you said, set piece after set piece to set piece was good, but there was no connective tissue to make it really interesting long term. However, I think they set it up pretty well to be able to make another one at least.
Of course.
Hopefully this is kind of like an Iron Man 2 situation where they tried to set so much up that it really diluted what it was. And then, you know, we get Iron Man 3, which really helped propel that again forward. I know Iron Man obviously sets the Marvel Universe in motion. Iron Man 2 could have killed it if Iron Man 3 hadn't been so good. So it's hopefully the next version of this John Kelly character is a little bit more compelling, and they need to recast some of the people in his universe. His commanding officer was just awful. She killed any momentum that he was building going into any scene.
What's interesting is that, you know, we keep coming back to this theme of like elaborate set pieces, and the director, who's Stefano Solima, was also the guy that did the Sicario sequel, which was not Sicario 2.
I am the Day of the Soldado. I will ride with any day of the week.
And I'm with you. I enjoyed it, but it's just interesting because talk about a movie with good set pieces. And it's kind of in the same vein. What I also found was very surprising in just doing some homework for this was the film had been in development since the book was first published in 93, and people from Keanu Reeves to Tom Hardy at one time had been attached. So I don't know, again, this doesn't suffer from lack of a strong lead. It suffers from that support cast. So it doesn't matter. It's not a better movie with Keanu. It's not a better movie with Tom Hardy. Michael B. Jordan's a great actor. It's just,
he has to feel kind of like Zion Williamson sitting on the Pelicans with like no one around him to help. Yeah. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it's tough when you find yourself in that position, but again, it's hard. We talked about this on the show before, you know, when you see a Michael B. Jordan name attached to a movie at this point, you're kind of like, I'm in. I think he's in that category of, I don't really need to know anything else. I like him enough. And that's how I was, by the way, with this Tom Clancy Without Remorse. You had mentioned it as something that was coming out soon. I'm familiar with the Clancy works, but I had no context for Without Remorse. I just popped it up on Amazon Prime because Michael B. Jordan's in it, had a great opening sequence, and then it just kind of led down this path. And you're right, Joel. They got to be thinking of it, depending on how this does, of course, which it's so tough to judge a COVID movie that's on Prime. And I don't even know if it was in theaters. I don't think it was.
And I don't know enough about the inner workings of Amazon's original content. I know, you know, Netflix, they're pretty good at just saying, here's the check, make the movie. And I don't know if Amazon sometimes can maybe get too many notes from the studio. It felt like this was one that got noted to death because it didn't even feel like Day of the Soldado. Like this guy, this director has such a style, and you could feel it a little bit, but it didn't feel like it was truly. I hope he had Final Cut. It didn't feel like he may. He may not have had Final Cut when it came to this thing.
Well, I just don't know what else you could do. And that's not to say that this isn't worth watching. It's enjoyable. But it, and if you're here just for the action and again, there's some emotional, like the fact that, like we said, that they took out his wife and unborn child is intense. But I would say overall, like you can watch this, you'll probably just see it once. I don't know if you'll revisit it. Maybe you kick the tires if there's a Without Remorse 2 or Still Remorseful or whatever it's going to be called.
Remorseless.
Remorseless. I just think
still
like.
Still Without Remorse.
I just don't know. I can say I'm probably not going to come back to it, but I did enjoy it because.
I'll watch any sequel. If Michael B. Jordan's still playing John Kelly, I'll watch anything that's in it because it's like. It's kind of like, you know, to make a sports analogy, you know, we're recording this on May 6th. You know, Albert Pujols was designated for assignment today. But if Albert Pujols is either a minor league park near me or if he's in a major league park, they bring him back up or he signs with a new team or he's traded, I'm still going to watch even if he is considered to be past his prime because I there is always a chance that he uncorks something, you know, at the plate. And that's kind of the way Michael B. Jordan is. Now, I'm not saying he's past his prime. If anything, he's entering his prime right now. But as long as he's in it, there's a chance that you're gonna see something that you really want to see. And so that's why I would still watch this because he gives a good enough performance that it's watchable and it's bankable, I think, for sequels. So that's why I think it belongs in the ring and that's why I think it has a chance to win. Because was it the best thing I've seen this year? No, that was probably The Mayor of Easttown. That is one of the best things I've seen this year. But is it way better than, you know, Coming to America again or the Coming to America 2? 100% better than that.
I would disagree. I think Coming to America has at least it can play on the nostalgia. It had funny moments. I'm going to watch Coming to America before I go to Without Remorse. That's just where I'm at.
Where are you at against me? Like, well, I know I watched the first episode of what you're bringing to the ring, which is The Innocent, which I'd like to go back and watch it again. Cause I wasn't in a spot where I could really give it my whole attention where I could read the subtitles.
Yeah. So what I love is like, you know, when you go to a streaming service and Netflix is like the king of algorithms and knowing what you like. But that's not to say that like they dictate their top 10 based on what I like. It's kind of like, here's the top 10 in the United States. And one of those, and this is another example of things that Tony saw on TikTok that led him to watch content. This is how I found Derek Delgadio. This is how I found The Innocent. A TikTok was like, stop what you're doing and go watch The Innocent on Netflix. I pulled up my phone. It was like number 7 or 8 across the country. I didn't know that it was a dubbed over, you know, Spanish speaking. I mean, it's in Spanish, but there's, you know, it's dubbed over. So if you can get through that, what you have is again, a show that kind of comes out of the gate hot, limited episodes, one season so far, an accidental killing. This is from the website. An accidental killing leads a man down a dark hole of intrigue and murder. Just as he finds love and freedom, one phone call brings back the nightmare. So, you know, this is a whole thing. And what I enjoyed is that the first episode really explores the main character and his accidental killing of a guy. Spoiler alert. He goes to jail. He comes out. He's in love. And then all of a sudden things are going on with the woman that he loves. And it's, you know, it's a weird flow to this, The Innocent. And then it just like the first episode comes to an end. And then the second episode, all of a sudden, it's like in a whole different, my first reaction was, is this even the same show? Are they, and what they're doing is they're showing you the other, you know, characters' perspectives, but you're dealing with this detective and she's investigating the murder of a nun, but there's more to the nun's story and there's all this intrigue. And then it ends with episode two with the detective like knocking on the door and there's our main character from episode one. So you're kind of starting to see how it's all connected. I don't think that The Innocent is for me as a 37-year-old guy. Like, I feel like I know, you know, because everybody's like really good looking and kind of like it's a little dramatic. But it is well done. And it's based off of these books by a very popular author that's had content turn into other successful ventures. So I just feel like, you know, sometimes you struggle with things to watch and sometimes all it takes is seeing something on social media or having a friend refer it to you and you're off to the races. So Harlan Coben is the author and he's done things that have been adapted like The Stranger, The Woods, The Innocent, of course. And then he has
one word titles.
Yes. He has Stay Close coming soon and then Gone for Good. So, I can't say that I've read any of the books, but I'm enjoying The Innocent. That said, I haven't finished it in its entirety. I think I have two episodes left, but it's just one of those things. It's like, we're still in this pandemic. You know, we're consumers of content. And I think you can trust a Netflix top 10. Now, that being said, there's things in the top 10. There's like this social media challenge. I don't even know what it's called. Baker, I have no interest in that.
Is in my top 10. I don't know if you've watched it yet. I feel like I have to. I might be on my guilty pleasures in a couple of weeks, but
I'm pulling up the Netflix app right now because I just want to see if this top 10 is tailored to me. Because so here's the top 10 in the United States today as of May 6th. Number one is The Circle, the social media competition. Number two is The Mitchells versus the Machines, an animated show.
Have you watched that?
I have not.
It's good. I watched it with Drew the other day. It's good.
How about Selena, the series, is number three?
Nope.
I would check that out. My wife is watching The Sons of Sam, A Descent into Darkness, which is a docuseries. What else is in there? Where'd it go? I lost the list already, if you can believe that. There it is. Okay, sorry, I'm back. Shadow Bone is number five. Was trending on TikTok. I have no idea.
Songs for these.
So Shadowbone's number five. Then you've got Madagascar 3, Cocomelon. The Innocent is number eight. How about the Matt Damon movie Green Zone at number nine?
I haven't seen it yet. I saw it popped up on my list.
It's from 2010.
See, yeah.
But it's new to Netflix.
I just missed it, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you remember that movie? And then
Love Happens. I feel like I don't know if I've seen Green Zone.
So
and I like Matt Damon.
Yeah, I think so. I think back to 2010, I bought my first home. And my wife was pregnant with our first child. And I was the defensive coordinator at a high school for football. So I don't know that I was seeing any movies in 2010. Like it was very much a busy, busy time of year for or a time of my life. So that might be why I've never seen The Green Zone.
Like I had an opposite experience because in 2010 I was you know, what was I? I was like 26.
You were big time mid-market radio guy, you know, emceeing, you know, dance contests on Friday nights at.
That's right. But we also went to a ton of movies, though. That's the thing, because we had a great relationship with the movie theater in the Quad Cities. But I don't think I came across Green Zone. Coming back to the battle, and I don't like to lay down the sword, but I think you can go The Innocent as a limited series versus Tom Clancy Without Remorse. I think, you know, I don't know. What I was going to say is there's more mass appeal with Michael B. Jordan, but at the same time, The Innocent is the eighth most popular piece of
I will say that
content in the country.
Is the competitor in me is going to say that Without Remorse should win, but the fan in me is saying that if I'm revisiting both of these, I'm going to revisit The Innocent first before I revisit Without Remorse. So that's why I'm not necessarily conceding, but I feel like the argument is compelling enough that The Innocent probably, when you put these two side by side, is the better of the two moving forward.
Well, I don't, and again, I feel bad that I haven't completed it, but what I'm going to say is I don't think it could have as kind of a disappointing ending or slightly predictable ending as Without Remorse does.
Well, I haven't seen bad acting in it either. That's the thing. What I have seen of it, the acting's been really good. Like, some of the performances in Without Remorse are so jarringly poor that it almost makes you want to turn it off.
I love it. Well, I am happy to accept a win for The Innocent on the Buffer podcast. And if you're just tuning in, you've got to check out The Innocent, and you might as well check out Tom Clancy's Without Remorse. And you also might as well sit tight and listen to this commercial break, and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back. It's the Buffer Podcast with Tony Tone and my main man,
Joel Krausar. I'm just trying to come up with like fun ways to say my name because it's a fun one to say. I've been saying it for 39 years, and I'm a narcissist, so I'm gonna find fun ways to say it myself.
Trigger and channel your inner Destiny's Child and do a little say my name, say my name. I just like that you're true to who you are. You don't need a nickname. You can just be...
Do you know what my nickname was growing up?
Slappy Pappy?
No, it wasn't. It was Chops. Chops was my nickname growing up.
Did you have the awesome, like, giant sideburns that were popular for a while?
That's how I got the nickname. So one of the really interesting facts about being a Krausar is that we start shaving in about fifth grade. So I started shaving in fifth grade. And so I could grow sideburns in sixth grade. And so I had legit sideburns in, like, sixth and seventh grade. And so that's how the Chops nickname came about. But, like, my junior year of high school was, like, when the Big Pun... He's not a player. He just crush a lot. Song came out.
Punisher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for some reason, like, people used to be like, he's not a player. He just chops a lot. Like, that's what like my buddies would say. And I just remember that. So somehow my nickname got was Chops and it stuck. And then it died out when I went to college. But
I love it. You know me. I love a good nickname. I was Big A. My name is Anthony.
Right.
It's really original. I've been big my whole life. I was 5'7" when I was 12. And my friend, shout out. Listen to this. Shout out to Rose Cloak, who is my friend Dan's mom. Dan and I were always the same height. He's 6'6". I'm 6'4.5". But yeah, Big A. And I carried that with me. It was funny. I can tell you exactly where I was freshman year, St. Ambrose University, sitting outside a dorm. Somebody said, you have a nickname. I told the Big A story. And that's, I had friends in college that only knew me as Big A. So I have had a lot of... I've had a lot of people in my life that have known me as not my real name. The only people that call me Anthony are my mom, my wife. And then sometimes people say it that like one of my wife's friends says it and it's fine, but I'm also like,
well, who are you? Are you trying to, is this a power like, play by like, you?
Like, I don't know if you need to do that. Like I've been Tony and then I was never called Tony until I started in radio in 2006, so I've been Tony Tone since December of 2006. So it is interesting when I hear people that are not my wife or my mom or other family members say Anthony. I'm kind of like, it's usually a telemarketer, right? Or a car warranty person. And you're like, no, he's dead. He's not here.
But my best friend growing up, Greg Velasquez, who I think listens to the pod. So when I got married, gosh, 15 years ago, his girlfriend at the time, he's no longer with this girl, but we were at my wedding. Greg's a groomsman. And so it's at the rehearsal dinner. And his girlfriend was like, you know, just thanks for inviting us and all this stuff. And she says to Greg, she goes, I'm surprised your friend Chops isn't here. And Greg just looks at her and goes, yeah, that's Joel. It's his wedding. It's Joel's wedding. Like she never knew my actual name was Joel.
Wow.
She'd only ever heard this person. She never met me. Like she also never met me, but she'd only heard conversations about Chops.
Awesome.
And then at the wedding, cause Greg's, you know, a pretty sophisticated human being is like not calling me by my high school nickname at, you know, at my wedding, right. You know, 6 years after he graduated high school. And so his girlfriend was super confused. And then all of a sudden she put two and two together and it was just,
that is amazing. I bet she felt awful. Cause that's something
she got obliterated at the reception and threw a fit because Greg was talking to his high school girlfriend who happened to be there and just,
boy,
huge drama. He had to leave. It was, it's still talked about to this day, 15 years later. And she didn't last much longer after that altercation. So,
no, I bet he was so annoyed too that he had to leave his friend's wedding.
Is there anything worse than bad weddings? Or maybe that's a guilty pleasure of like the stories of like the bad wedding fights, you know, someone can't handle their liquor. You've seen a lot. I know as a DJ, I've been to a lot of weddings. And then you can kind of start to see what the telltale signs are, but should that be our segue into guilty pleasures? You know,
it can be. And I'll tell you what, as someone that has three weddings to DJ this year still, and then I'm retiring, I always hope for the best, and I am prepared for the person that's had too many and the dropping of drinks and the, you know, a song you should play. When are you going to play something I can dance to? Like, well, you've been dancing for 3 hours. Yeah, but when are you going to play something good? Okay, what would be a good song? Like Moni Moni. Like, I played that at 8. It's 11. Where were you? Oh, shoot. I don't know where I was. I'm like, why don't you just go sit down on that chair and not talk to anybody? Yeah, just get lost.
Is there anything better than that wedding at like 11:30 where they bring out like the chicken strips and cheese cakes? Quesadillas or something just to soak up the booze.
Yes. I wish that more, honestly, as a wedding DJ, I've had that happen. If I've done, I don't know how many weddings, it's happened less than 5 times. And every time it happens, it's like the best thing ever because everybody needs a little something at, and we had that happen at our wedding, by the way. And it was great. So yeah, a guilty pleasure of mine is people watching at weddings, and it's a perfect segue into the guilty pleasure segment of the buffer. And I'm happy to defer and let you start.
Yeah, I feel like my guilty pleasure works because with the hijinks we were just talking about can probably be categorized under this word of ridiculousness. And my guilty pleasure is definitely the Rob Dyrdek TV show Ridiculousness, which is really the only thing that is on MTV anymore, is this clips show.
How is it still on? I feel like first of all, I love Rob Dyrdek, and I'm ride or die on Robin Big.
That was one of my favorite shows ever.
We interviewed both of them, and I think I've interviewed Rob Dyrdek at least twice. Rest in peace, Big. I loved Robin Big. I couldn't get enough of it.
I want to get a Honda Ruckus because of Robin Big. Those Honda Ruckuses that he had. We should get buffer blue and black Ruckuses and ride them around town. You think our wives would leave us if we did that?
I think they would consider it. But like, do you feel like Ridiculous has been? Is Ridiculous like at a certain point, Tosh.0 became kind of like, okay, like, I don't know. And not to say that I dislike Tosh.0, but like with Ridiculous, and Tosh.0 is definitely better than Ridiculousness. Just seems like, do we still need a Ridiculousness? All these videos are at our fingertips, right? All these clips you can find online. Yes, what's the point?
But I'm not someone like at night, when I'm editing, you know, this podcast, or I don't watch content on my phone. I'm still one who turns on the TV and watches it on an actual TV. So yes, you're right. You can go to YouTube and watch people face planting, you know, riding a bicycle. But I think the fact that it's great to have on in the background. Like it's so mindless. And Tosh.0, I know you said it was better. I don't know if it was better. It's better written. It has a different purpose. So to me, Tosh.0 is more about the complete humiliation of the soul that has done something in a funny clip, as opposed to Rob Dyrdek is just Rob Dyrdek is the guy in your office who's like, did you see this person slip on the ice? Like it's basically that version of just that fun guy at the office who's showing you the random clip. It's not a here's why society sucks because this person, you know, can't, you know, it just stopped their car in the middle of the road, you know, or you know, here's these people doing street lugeing without helmets and totally road rashing. So I think a Deer Dex place comes from more of a place of joy. That's where Tosh.0 came from, more of a place of biting
cynicism.
Comedy. Yeah, cynicism. Yeah. So,
I just think that like ridiculousness is, I mean, America's Funniest Home Videos is the OG, right? So,
yeah, 100%. You know,
I don't know if I'm just surprised that it's still a thing. Like, and again, I like Rob Dyrdek, but I haven't, I maybe I didn't even know that ridiculousness is still on.
It's
I don't
on
have
like 24/7. Like if you look at the MTV guide right now, like if you go and pull up whatever, however you stream your cable television with it, if it's got MTV, it's like from the hours of 8 PM to 3 AM, it's solid block of ridiculousness.
See, and I had no idea, but I feel like it's something that, like you said, you can go to it and you know kind of what you're going to get. And I think it's, what's her name that really annoys me though?
Chanel West Coast. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like his supporting cast is weak.
And there was always that they had a beef, like him and Tosh kind of had a beef for a while, which was entertaining. But, and again, like Tosh and Rob are different, but damn, that Rob Dyrdek is likable. Like,
the thing is like, he's likable.
Yeah.
And I know our friend, I believe our friend Mike Bridenstine, who's going to be on next week's episode of The Buffer, he's written on ridiculousness, as a writer. And I think the Dyrdek, again, I like it because it's not being mean. It's like, here's somebody who their dog is pooping on them while they're passed out, and it shouldn't be as funny as it is, but it is. It's hilarious. Right. So that's why it's my guilty pleasure. It's not something I'm just gonna offer up at a job interview if they're asking me like what I do in my free time. But when it's 10 o'clock at night and everyone's asleep, and I'm editing this all together, there's a good chance that ridiculousness is on in the background.
Well, and you could almost say the same thing for my guilty pleasure for this week, which is something that is near and dear to my heart. And it's great that it's not necessarily back, but at least, this is something that I had purchased on DVD. I'm not ashamed to admit, the original Muppet Show. And now it's all, of course, on Disney+, right? Since it's part of the Disney umbrella. But it wasn't until recently, I would say within the last month or two, that they kind of rolled out the original Muppet Show. And you're seeing people like Alice Cooper and Leo Sayer and those Steve Martin, all those great guests. It's essential. It holds up. It would be one of those things that like my kids are not going to appreciate it. Like they'll sit through like a Muppet movie, the new one with Jason Segel or like Segal or like the old ones, but I don't think they're ready to kind of dive into that. But a great production quality too, by the way, on the Muppet Show. So if you're, whether you're going to discover it for the first time, or if you're like me, a child of the 80s and 90s that grew up with the Muppets and Muppet Babies and Sesame Street, then this is right up your alley to kind of go have a stroll down memory lane with Kermit and the crew. And there's also, by the way, just a lot of naturally funny things built in that, of course, at the time when you're a kid, you don't really fully appreciate. And now as an older person, you're like, oh, that's why that's so funny, because they kind of got that layered in. And that's what, of course, all the Pixar movies have done so well. So check out the Muppet Show on Disney+. And I was thinking, is that more of a Buffer confession? But no, I'm here to say loud and proud, that can be a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Your points on that, how good those shows are 100% accurate too. I mean, I remember watching it on Sunday nights, like when it was on, like it was appointment watching as a family. So
they captured a lot of pop culture, like it's very timely. So I'm all in for it. All right, let's roll up and go into the confessional. I feel like I'm ready. I don't know if you are.
I'm pretty ready. Yeah.
Confession. I ain't seen it. So I thought about this long and hard, and then it was easy. It was clear. So most times, because of where I work and where I live currently, it's about three blocks away. I'll come home for lunch. And my wife and I have always had opposite schedules. And it was, I believe it was Monday when I kind of cruised home, and she was here for about an hour before she had to go to work, and she was watching a show. And it's kind of one of those things, like she was watching it, but she was also like on her phone. And I realized very quickly what it was. And it dawned on me that this is a series that I have seen, I think, two or three episodes of, maybe like three or four. But I'm here to confess that I have not seen Schitt's Creek in its entirety. And I feel like Schitt's Creek is one of those things. It's kind of like The Office. Like I've said, I haven't really seen The Office. And when I say that, it's not like I'm doing it to try and be like anti-establishment.
No, you are. It's just, you are. You,
that's, but it's why not. You, but because you, I love Parks and Rec. I love, see, Parks and Rec.
But why won't you give it a chance then? You've got Peacock.
But I have. Go I think watch. I think I've seen an episode or two of The Office, and I just didn't. It's like the same thing with Game of Thrones. Like it just didn't bring me in. Like Breaking Bad took me like three episodes, maybe two episodes, to really like get drawn in. And I feel like I know Schitt's Creek is good. It has people that I like: Dan Levy, Eugene Levy, you know, Catherine O'Hara. Like the formula is there from what I've seen and I remember I enjoyed. I just don't know if I have like the capacity to give it. Was it like six or seven seasons?
Yeah,
and multiple great networks.
I've watched it all.
And like I said, I'm the guy that's sitting here. Like, I love Dan Levy. He was great on SNL recently. I love Eugene Levy from the American Pie movies and everything else that he's done. But I'm confessing that I haven't seen Schitt's Creek in its entirety. My wife's watching it for like the third time.
And I'm not trying to judge you. I'm just shocked. That's all.
Well, listen, the good news is with me is that there's been things that I've confessed to having not seen, and I've gone and consumed. So maybe this is one of those things I just need to add into the old queue, if you'll have it, to throw back to the Netflix DVD days.
So, yeah. And my confession is, you know, it's interesting because it came up when we were doing our March Madness mm-hmm. bracket. So you brought up who your youth basketball coach was.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And that it was from the movie Hoop Dreams.
Yes.
I've never seen Hoop Dreams.
Wow.
Which is, I read the book Hoop Dreams, that was written along with the documentary. I think that it was one of those where they kind of transcribed the documentary. I remember getting it out of like the book order in school, like in 1994, 1995, mm-hmm. And reading the book. So I knew who you were talking about. But I have never actually seen the documentary Hoop Dreams, which is, when you look at my DNA as a fan of content, I love documentaries. I love sports documentaries. I love things about basketball, like the 30 for 30 on Hank Gathers, and you know that whole story. I'm all in for those kind of stories, you know. And I've just never gotten around to Hoop Dreams, and that's,
I don't know if I can convey like properly how good Hoop Dreams the documentary is, directed by Steve James. He literally, so I don't want to go too long on this because it's either you've heard of it and you've seen it and you know how good it is, or it means nothing to you. And I would encourage you to just Google Hoop Dreams and check it out. Bottom line, it's Will Gates and it's Arthur, I think it's AG, if I'm not mistaken. And it's Steve James, and he is just embedded with these two young African-American boys, because he meets them when they're boys and they're in like seventh and eighth grade. And it's a story of how they're recruited by this private high school, St. Joe's in Westchester, Illinois, a suburb, and how they kind of had this system worked out where they would go into the city of Chicago and scout talent and find ways to get them to come to school to really beef up their basketball program. It came out in 1994. He stays with them from high school into college, Will Gates went to, where did he go? He went to Marquette, and he was, you know, he kind of was plagued by a little nagging knee injury. Will Gates was, and that's what ultimately cost him his career. Arthur had a pretty good run in college, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, and then
he actually made it to the NBA too. I'm not certain, but I think
I can't remember that. I feel like I should know that since I've seen the movie so much. But long story short, like Hoop Dreams in 94, I'm 11 years old and it's really heavy. And I don't know if I could watch it now without probably shedding a tear because it's so emotional at times and it deals with relationships. And kudos to Steve James. He did a brilliant job. But long story short, my mom and my brother and I moved from Elmwood Park, to Oak Park, Illinois. I would have been going into seventh grade, new school, hated my one basketball coach. I had come from a successful program. Our basketball team in 3 years from fourth to sixth grade was like 48 and 10. We did not lose. And I had this coach who thought he was going to teach me how to shoot. And in seventh grade, again, I'm like 5'11", 6 foot, pretty good at basketball. And this coach and I just did not get along. I had another coach that I love who was my friend's dad. Shout out to Pat Allen Sr. Longer story short, I was done with basketball going into eighth grade. My mom's like, you're playing. She signed me up to go play for the Park District, had to go to tryouts, walked into the gym, was lacing up the Jordans that I don't know how my mom afforded. And I looked up and there's Will Gates from Hoop Dreams. And my dad was with me, who's a retired Chicago cop. And I'm like, Dad, that's Will Gates from Hoop Dreams. And he's like, I don't know who that is. So longer story short, I get on Will Gates's team and I can't tell you how great of a coach he was and how awesome our team was. I think I averaged like 15 or 16 a game and it was run and gun. And it was a different style of basketball that I was used to. So I hope that you'll watch Hoop Dreams because then you'll very quickly understand how awesome Will Gates. I mean, Will is just shout out to Will Gates and Hoop Dreams. It's so damn good. It's long, dude. It's long though. It's like almost, if I'm not mistaken, it's at least 3.5 hours long.
So St. Joe's, isn't that where I think
Isaiah Thomas
and Evan Turner, yeah. I think went there too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cause I remember watching there was like a documentary on Isaiah Thomas, like in the early 90s, maybe late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him wearing the St. Joe's uniform.
But it's just, I'll watch it.
Just when I have time. So 2022, I will watch Hoop Dreams.
And you'll understand like why I love basketball so much. And man, I mean, I saw Kevin Garnett play basketball in high school. Like Kevin Garnett, Ronnie Fields, Farragut High School. Unbelievable. Corey Maggette, he led the summer camp that I went to. Will Gates is my eighth grade basketball coach. So obviously having the Chicago Bulls in your backyard, winning six titles, I wouldn't trade any of that for the world. So I'm going to stop talking. You got to watch Hoop Dreams. That's okay, the bottom line.
You got to watch Tristan Wirfs high school film of him throwing the discus. Cause that's what we do in Iowa. We just have linemen.
Deal.
That's what we get. Linemen.
That's okay. All right. Is it time for dress socks and Crocs? Cause I'm wearing my Crocs right now. I have my Crocs with no socks on, which is kind of gross, but.
Slap it, pop it, wait.
Dress socks and Crocs.
So am I starting this one too? Or do you want to roll first? I feel like I should start since I think yours is going to be a better way to close this thing out.
Yeah, go ahead.
So 2 weeks ago, old sausage foot was or squash, but whatever we called it. I said it looked like a butternut squash. Last week it was I played paper, rock, scissors with a kid on pitcher's mound to try to loosen him up. So this week it's just another chronicle and I'm getting flippin' old, Tony. I'm almost 40 years old. My body freaking hates me. And I now am a regular user of topical arthritis cream that I have to put on like multiple joints of my body just to be able to function right now. Cause it's just my knees and my ankles and my elbow from throwing batting practice. Like it's just a mess. Like I'm seriously looking at investing and cryotherapy for my home,
wow.
Where I can just like sit in this, you know, sleeve of cold water every night just to reduce the inflammation in my bones and my muscles. Like, it's
not like the cryo chamber that Michael Jackson had, though, right? Or is it the same thing?
No.
Okay. No. Okay. I'm just making sure.
I'm still going to say no, because I just want nothing in common with Michael Jackson.
I just feel like getting old is rough. And
getting more active, because it's like, you know, I'm trying to not die. And so I'm trying to do more working out, more. My kids are in stuff, so I'm playing with them. I'm, you know, it's summer, so I got to mow the lawn, all that stuff. But it's like, the more I do, it's just. I'm even going so far as like reading about like what foods are anti-inflammatory. Like I'm starting to go like the whole holistic road. It's crazy.
Makes sense. I mean, I think as you get older, that cause and effect really heats up. Like, you know, if I eat something bad, I may not feel good. Or
I beat the crap out of my body between ages of 15 and 23. Like, played very physical sports at a relatively high level, and I just and now I'm paying for it. I've still stayed the size of a defensive tackle, which I don't need to be the size of a defensive tackle anymore. So, and I'm paying for it. So I'm trying to figure this out. So by the time I turn 40 in December, I'm not really on that downward spiral to a total knee replacement. So arthritis creep. It's now over the counter, and I didn't have to get a prescription for it because I can just load up on that stuff.
And it's not the same thing as like BioFreeze, right? It's different. Like, that's more intense.
Yeah, no, this is like actual. It used to, up until 6 months ago, you had to get a prescription for it. Like,
wow. I don't know about that.
I'm glad my dad's a physical therapist, or else I would have had to pay for all of this like advice. So thankfully, I can just call him over to my house on a Sunday night, and he can tell me that my hamstring tendon is swollen the size of a golf ball. That was a fun one.
Jeez, that's awful.
So that's the crappy part. But the really happy part was our community had an outdoor concert. We actually got to go to an outdoor concert. It was an outdoor ballet, and I took my whole family, you know, my two sons and my daughter, and it was just really great for our community. It was really great to take art in again, something that's so important to me. The final number was a choreographed piece called Information by the composer Philip Glass, who is one of my all-time favorite composers. And just it was good to be moved by art again. So that's kind of, I'm very proud of my wife and I as parents that we both still have a passion for the arts, and that we've been able to kind of share that with our children. And I have three kids who, they play sports, but they also do a lot in the arts as well. I have two piano players, and my youngest son, I think, actually a little bit of a penchant for dance. So we'll see. He just turned five this week. So we'll see if he, truly does want to maybe take dance next year. So he's a firecracker, and it'll be interesting to see. My daughter is.
I love it.
My daughter loves dance too. So she was great to show her these professionals from the Des Moines Ballet Company and the University of Iowa. It was a great event for our community.
It's really cool to have opportunities to say, regardless of what it is, like, hey, you're interested in this now, but look at this person. They kind of stayed with it, and now that's their job, and that's super cool. My dress, socks, and Crocs is our cat has been missing since last week. His name is Garfield. He's an orange cat, and there's a little bit of an update to this story. We think he maybe has been taken in by someone that doesn't live too far from us, that I gotta be careful here. So the good news is, it seems like if it is him, he's being cared for. The bad news is, the person that may be caring for him thinks that it's their cat.
And you said before we broadcast that there might be some cognitive issues.
Yeah. Like, long story short, this cat, we've had him for almost a year, I think. He's nice. He has his front claws. For all the people out there that are like asking, he would be outside often and then come right back in. Last week, got out, didn't come back, probably got lost. Sounds like he might be being kind of held captive, but being taken care of. I don't know if I need John Kelly from Tom Clancy's Without Remorse to like go kidnap my cat back, but it's going to be really awkward if I go to this person's house and ask like, do you have my cat? And then if it's not the cat, like what do you do at that point? Like how awkward is that going to be if I'm like, hey, I think you have my cat. And they're like, no, this is the cat. And then the cat walks out and it's not him. Then I just have to walk away. Like, thank God I'm moving so that like, this isn't going to be a thing that happens again where people are like, that guy just went over and accused that person of taking his cat. And then it wasn't his cat. And then he just kind of sped off. But that's what's happening. We're trying to find him and we're moving in less than 8 days and we'll see what happens. And Garfield the cat, if you're listening to the Buffer podcast right now, I want you to meow 3 times if they're lowering cat food down into a hole. And if it's Buffalo,
it took a dark turn.
That's right. I mean, listen, silence you never know
of the feline.
That's right. You never know what's going on in people's houses, but we'll find out. I might call that's, animal okay, control.
Allegedly, this is all a legend.
Yeah, it's very speculative, and I think there's people that we've had a lot of orange cat sightings.
Isn't that funny how you put this out there? And people are like, there's these two here, and it's like they're always there. It's just like,
I've seen the same. I've seen 8 orange cats that aren't him, and yeah, stop letting your cats out. Note to self as well, like, why are there so many loose cats in our town? I don't know, but it's not cool. Know.
I've got a couple in my neighborhood that I'm done with, but I'm not a cat person. I know. No. And don't
or Facebook.
And that's gonna wrap this up, I think. I know what we were able to
things that we've done in the past, but it's really exciting.
Say that again. I'm having an issue here. So,
no, I was just saying we have a really exciting episode of The Buffer scheduled for next Friday, May 14th. It's going to deal with a lot of movies that I think people are going to have seen and enjoy as we assemble a team to talk about baseball.
Yeah, America's pastime, baseball. And, you and I both have a rich history in baseball. And we're fortunate to have some friends of the podcast who also have rich histories in baseball. So we're going to be joined by the host of Hunk with Mike Bridenstine. Mike Bridenstine, Muscatine native, who is a stand-up comic, lives in California. And Mike also is a baseball historian and has done a lot of research in baseball history. And he has actually published several articles regarding his research. And then acquaintance of mine from college, J.D. Scholten, who many may know from his forays in the political realm here in the state of Iowa the last 2 elections, was running for office, failed both of those attempts. But he just made his pitching debut again at the age of 40.
Of course, anchor.fm. Thank you so much for listening. This week, The Innocent beat Tom Clancy Without Remorse, but you can't lose when you watch good content and talk about it with your friends and family. We'll see you next time on The Buffer. Take care, everybody.
Goodbye.